This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
So I'm here today with Dr. Helen Fraser from the Open University, and she's visiting us here at the department this week to participate in the STFC Summer School, which the University of Manchester is hosting. And that's basically all I know.
Hello.
Hi, Helen. So do you want to give yourself a slightly better introduction than what I've given you there?
Okay, yeah. So actually, I was an undergraduate here in Manchester. So I'm going through a complete reminisce being here at the moment.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's so weird. I worked out this morning that it's 26 years since I started here as an undergraduate. And I always consider myself quite young. Suddenly that's made me feel really old, because that's more years than the age I was when I got here.
Goodness. Well, do you find it much changed?
A lot changed. The city has changed. I mean, lots of things have changed. But the department has changed and it's not changed. So I actually have very fond memories of cycling my bike along Upper Brook Street and Oxford Road and Brunswick Street. And I could still walk into the physics department at the front, and I could still remember where the toilets were and the office to give in my tutorials. And I took really great pleasure this morning as I went in to listen to the earlier lectures before mine in the summer school, in sitting in the exact spot where I sat in my first year undergraduate lectures.
Oh, goodness. Did you have a favourite spot?
I did. There was a group of us, and we all sat in a certain place all of the time.
Oh, really?
It really was. Everyone had their real creatures of habit. And as I went in the lecture theatre, that all came back to me. It was really funny.
Oh,
I know it's not
nice.
A psychology interview, but absolutely amazing. Although they're slightly more comfy now because they're all pink and cushioned instead of wooden and slamming down with big holes
and loud tables.
I know. So I feel today I've really achieved one of those great lifetime ambitions. You know, when I was an undergraduate and thought I might want to be an academic, I always had this vision I might one day come back to Manchester and lecture to a room full of students, and there it was.
Oh my goodness, and now you're fulfilling your dream. That's so exciting.
It feels a little bit like that, yeah.
That's cool, that's great.
And they all seem to be listening as well, which was even better.
I'm so glad to hear it. So we, on that note, do you want to tell us a bit about what you were talking to the students about?
So I do laboratory astrophysics.
Okay.
Well, I'm an astrochemist per se, which means I ask about where are the molecules in the universe, particularly the near universe, so in our own galaxy. Huh? And the answer to that, let's get to the answer to that first, is that they are in regions where stars and planets are forming, mostly.
Okay.
And molecules can tell us a lot. They can tell us about physical conditions in space environments, but they can also tell us about chemistry. And chemistry is one of the things that has an impact into the star and planet formation process. So we like to understand the chemistry by combining observations with theory and with lab work.
So when you say lab work, because that's a completely foreign concept to me, and I think to most people here in this department.
Maybe in the astronomy department, though, if we look at
the physics department, not so much. Yeah, but for us, certainly, you know, we hear lab work and we just picture people kind of in white coats with test tubes. And
oh, yeah, that happens over the road in the chemistry
department. Yeah, we don't go over there.
Well, it's kind of quite interesting, isn't it? Because actually, in the physics department, they do quite a lot of lab work.
Yeah.
You have the graphene people now, but I mean, also still left over from when I was here a long time ago. There's condensed matter research and photonics research and things like that. But what we do in laboratory astrophysics actually spreads across atomic and molecular physics, nuclear physics, particle physics. But what I'm particularly interested in is ice.
Okay.
Solid materials. So it's like condensed matter physics.
Okay.
And we really try and recreate the conditions of space in the lab. So low pressures and low temperatures, like you find in star-forming regions.
Yep.
And then in this controlled laboratory environment, we try and understand the chemical processes that happen to condense material.
Right.
The physical processes that happen, how we form it, how it gets destroyed again.
Okay.
And also we look at its spectroscopy, because that's what you get when you're observing things.
So you can look at the spectra of some material in the lab, and that presumably helps you know more about spectra that you observe.
Yeah, I mean, often actually what we need, what I was talking to the students about this morning was I was actually talking to them about when you're observing something at a telescope, you know, we get all this light of some kind from the electromagnetic spectrum. Where does it come from?
Yeah.
Even people who are looking at galaxies with the 21 centimetre line, actually it's a data transition. It's to do with hydrogen.
Uh-huh.
It's to do with spectroscopy. Uh-huh. It's to do with quantum mechanics.
Uh-huh.
And whereas the astronomers use that to talk about the astronomy, the lab astro people and the astrochemists, we kind of step behind it and say, yeah, but what are you looking at? What is it? What causes that? Why is that happening?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's kind of interesting. Sometimes we hear about processes of recombination, how atoms and electrons recombine or ions and electrons recombine. We hear about how we form molecules like water or carbon monoxide, and we use those very often in astronomy to visualise what we're seeing.
So just going back for a minute to something you mentioned a second ago that piqued my interest, you said you were especially interested in ice.
Yes.
So what kind of ice is there in star-forming regions?
Ah, that's an excellent question. Well, the most abundant ice is water ice.
Right.
But it's not the kind of stuff you might find in your fridge.
Yeah.
So you open the fridge door or you want to put it in your whiskey.
Yeah.
Not really that kind
not
of ice.
Not the same.
Not the same, that's unfortunately. What I figured. So the ice is formed by chemical reactions on the surfaces of dust grains in space. And dust is the bane of the astronomer's life.
Oh, yeah. People here love dust, though.
I love dust.
Yeah, dust
I love
is cool. Dust is pretty cool.
I love dust, but I think a lot of amateur astronomers who might be listening maybe don't like dust so much. It obscures what they want to see. But if we're not looking in the visible part of the spectrum, dust is cool.
Right.
And this dust is cold, maybe 10 Kelvin, that's minus 263 degrees centigrade.
Okay.
And what happens is, if we've already formed a molecule like water, it condenses, you know, a bit like you get frost on your car in the mornings.
Yeah.
That kind of ice is, it has a structure called hexagonal ice. So if you think of hexagons, all the hydrogens and oxygens are arranged in hexagons.
Right.
This ice is, in space, is completely what we call amorphous. It has no structure at all.
That's fascinating.
Think of a sponge.
Okay.
A sponge. That's exactly the kind of structure it has.
So spongy ice. And, I mean, does that happen because of the conditions that it's in space?
Absolutely. It's absolutely governed by the temperature and the pressure.
Okay.
And water dominates, but there are lots of other molecular species. It's why we call it condensed matter.
Right.
Because it really is frozen out stuff. That's what that means.
I got to say, we're in pretty terrifying territory for me at the moment because I did not do well in my condensed matter modules in university. I ran as far away from that as I could.
Oh, no. I quite enjoyed it. So luckily
I can see. That's good.
but there are lots of things like carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide is in the gas. Mm-hmm. It's something a lot of people at Jodrell and other places use quite a lot to image star-forming regions, planetary disks, extra-galactic sources.
Sure.
And in actual fact, if the densities get high enough in star-forming regions or the temperatures get low enough, even carbon monoxide can sort of freeze out, we call it. That's the technical term we use.
Okay.
It condenses and it forms a molecular solid, solid carbon dioxide ice.
Ice.
That happens at about 21 Kelvin, well, give or take, let's say 2021, which is minus 253 degrees centigrade.
Right.
So pretty cold.
Yeah.
Colder than Manchester.
Colder than my freezer.
Colder than your freezer, that's definitely true.
So when you're working on this in the lab, do you replicate the amorphous ice in the lab?
We try to, yes, we
How's
do try
to. How's that going?
To. Well, it goes very well. I've been doing it now for about 20 years. That's pretty shocking. but we have very good recipes for how to make the ice and how to grow the ice.
Okay.
Actually, there are a lot of fundamental things. So often people like myself, we sometimes find ourselves in astronomy worlds. We sometimes find ourselves in chemistry worlds.
Okay.
And we sometimes find ourselves in physics worlds. And still, there are lots of big discussions about the exact structure of the ice.
Yeah.
But from an astronomy perspective, the really interesting thing is, we're talking on a sort of angstrom nanometer scale that the ice looks like a sponge.
Right, okay.
But what that means is it's got lots of holes and voids in it in which you can trap gases.
I see.
And so it acts like a sorption pump. It takes a big reservoir of all the gases all around. And basically what that means is it hides things from the gas phase. So when we look at star formation, there are lots of processes going on, velocity processes, drift processes, ionization processes, and chemical processes. Uh-huh. All the processes that affect star formation and planet formation, actually, because it's kind of a byproduct, they all occur on similar timescales. And if in a chemical reaction, you take a reagent out of the equation, if you like, if you hide it away in a box somewhere, which is the ice.
Or in the ice, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Basically. Then basically you change what can happen. You change how things can cool. You change how energy can be distributed.
Right.
So that has a huge impact on everything else that's going on.
Okay.
So this thing becomes really important in understanding sort of the synergy of the bigger picture. So
I see.
In modern star formation techniques, when we're trying to model what's going on, we often combine chemical models with hydrodynamic models, lots of complicated things. I can't do it. But these modellers, they really want numbers. They want to know, you know, when does it get hidden, these gases, at what temperatures, at what pressures. We determine those things in the lab. So we get to tinker in the lab and do some very fundamental chemistry and physics. And then throw it all back in a process which astronomers can understand.
Yeah, so then it essentially becomes a factor that can be put into these models.
Absolutely.
Cool.
And then the other side of it, of course, is when I go and make observations, because I also make observations. I've used a lot the Akari satellite. It was a Japanese infrared satellite, which came sort of around the time of Spitzer, a little bit later.
Right.
But it worked in the near-infrared, so the 2 to 5 micron region.
Yeah,
so
because dust is all about infrared, really, isn't it?
Dust is about infrared, but often when we look at dust, we look a little bit longer wavelength. So people might have been used to seeing from the Spitzer Space Telescope, that worked between 5 and 20 microns, the short wavelength.
Yeah.
That told us a lot about the dust. But all the key ice features, what we're looking at in this infrared region is the stretching vibrations of the bonds in the molecules. And all the key features are between 2 and 5 microns, the stretches of an oxygen and hydrogen bond, a carbon monoxide bond, carbon dioxide bond. So we use this Akari, this Japanese satellite, to really look at that and try and map the distribution of ice in the sky. But, you know, life is never simple in astronomy, is it?
Because, you know, don't I know it?
you can look and you can go, okay, we've got a picture. We've seen there's some ice there.
Uh-huh.
But actually, as astronomers, we want to ask the question, how much ice is there? And that's not an easy question to answer, because spectra of ices change according to how they're mixed with other chemicals, temperature, how much stuff we have on the surface.
Yeah.
So in the lab, we have to do a lot of control experiments so we understand how the spectroscopy changes.
Uh-huh.
And then we have to put that back into understanding and interpreting our observations.
Yes.
And what we get out at the other end is normally a column density or an abundance, or if you like, it's like a concentration, really.
Right.
If I talk in chemistry languages or what everyone at home might understand. And it basically tells us how much of it we've got there.
Okay.
But actually what's really, really amazing, almost everywhere we look where we do find ice, is when we look at how much we have. Let's just consider water ice for a minute because it's easier. So we know these molecular clouds that form stars and planets, they're composed predominantly of molecular hydrogen gas.
Yes.
H2.
Yeah.
Actually, the next most abundant molecule we find there is the water that's in the ice. Even though we can't see it very easily, because we have to observe it in the solid state in absorption.
Yes.
And of course, what we do, we observe all these other things. You read these stories in the press about glycine or amino acids or ethanol.
Yes.
Or carbon monoxide, all these interesting chemicals that are all emitting in the gas phase.
Yes.
And most of them are there because chemistry has happened in the ice. Everything's been kicked off back to the gas phase. So this huge molecular reservoir we have in star-forming regions, all down to the ice.
Well, that is amazing. That's really fascinating. So before we wrap it up, I want to ask you something kind of unrelated.
Great. I like unrelated.
So just something I'm a little bit curious about. So you're with the Open University, and I don't know a whole lot about that institution. So where are you actually based?
Okay, so in the Open University, we're based in Milton Keynes. All of our postdocs and our PhD students, we all exist in a real physical building in Milton Keynes.
Because I was kind of picturing you just sort of up in the clouds somewhere.
No. We're not that ethereal yet, pervading everyone's mind.
Right.
No, we're all very much based there, and our labs are based there, and that's where we do our research, unless, of course, we're at a telescope. But as you know, these days, when we go observing, we're normally sat at our computer at our desks
It's true.
Much less romantic.
Yep.
But our undergraduate students who also study astronomy, you know, the Open University trains more astronomy undergraduate students than any other institution in the United Kingdom every
year. Way, that's amazing.
Yes way. So we have a huge number. So hi out there, anyone from the OU who's listening, a little plug there. But our undergraduate students work by distance learning.
Yes.
So they work with online courses, maybe books, and they have local tutors.
Yeah.
And so as academics, we're doing a lot of the preparation behind the scenes helping to run the courses.
Okay. And do you like record lectures or do you just send out notes?
No, we don't.
You
it's
don't?
Something I really miss, I must admit. Before I was there, I was in Strathclyde University.
Okay.
And I used to really love face-to-face lecturing with the undergraduates. Something I really miss.
Yeah.
Something I really enjoyed today when I came back to Manchester,
good.
Actually.
Good, I'm glad. Well, anyway, so that was Dr. Helen Fraser telling us about space ice and the Open University. And I'm going to wrap this up now because we have an STFC summer school dinner to get to.
Yes, we have to go and have our drinks.
We do have to go have our drinks.
A little bit of alcohol with ice.
Our gins and tonics with ice. But not amorphous ice.
No, not amorphous ice. That wouldn't be good for us. No.
Well, thank you very much, Helen.
Thank you for having me.